desolate stretch of Los Alamos in New Mexico. She notes it was inhabited by Hispanos. They were given less than 24 hours to leave, their farms bulldozed. We have 15 seconds to give us a sense of what we'll talk about in part two.
Well, there was there were a lot of secrecy aspects to Los Alamos. That's a lot to go into there. But the legacy of Los Alamos was a lot of these radiation effects and secrecy. The secrecy regime that really held sway in the U.S. for decades after, really, right to this day.
Well, Greg Mitchell, we want to thank you for being with us. We're going to link to your new piece for the Los Angeles Times. Oppenheimer's here. Is Hollywood still afraid of the truth about the atomic bomb? And we'll do part two at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland. 90.7 FM Community Radio.
In 2020, Portland saw unprecedented protests for racial justice and widespread criticism of the Portland police and the institution of policing itself. It's now been almost 3 years since over 80% of Portland voters approved changing the city charter to create a new civilian-led police oversight system. The Police Accountability Commission has been hammering out the details, and their plan goes before City Council at the end of August. Totality of Circumstances will be hosting the commissioners live on KBOO on Tuesday, July 25th, and you can call in with questions or comments about the proposal. You can also send us questions at totalityradio@gmail.com. That's totalityradio@gmail.com. Join us on July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m. and make your voice heard.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Department of Energy will spend $2 billion on energy upgrades in the Pacific Northwest.
Wildfires and mean healthy on air for Central and Southern Oregonians.
And some 16,000 Washingtonians get student debt relief.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 24th, 2023. I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Federal authorities plan to invest $2 billion in Pacific Northwest energy grid updates in the next decade. The Bonneville Power Administration is within the Federal Department of Energy and distributes hydroelectric power to the Pacific Northwest. The energy is generated by 31 federal dams in the Columbia River Basin. The power is primarily used by the population centers to the west of the Cascades, namely the Puget Sound area and Portland. Experts anticipate that energy demands in the Pacific Northwest are going to increase by nearly a quarter in the next decade. The $2 billion in federal funding is intended to upgrade the electric grid to meet that need. Specifically, officials plan to upgrade or build nearly 300 miles of transmission lines throughout Washington and Oregon. The projects will increase transmission capacity by up to 6 gigawatts. That's enough power for about 4.5 million homes. The Portland area upgrades are some of the first scheduled. Officials hope to begin replacing 7.5 miles of line between Portland and Vancouver in 2024. But before any of those upgrades can happen, the Bonneville Power Administration plan has to pass environmental reviews. That could take months or years.
Two wildfires in Central and Southern Oregon have been unhealthy air quality advisories for six counties until Wednesday night, at least. The Bedrock Fire between Bend and Eugene and the Flat Fire in Southwest Oregon have sent up plumes of smoke. Residents of six counties are impacted by the air quality. Deschutes, Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, Lake, and the east part of Lane County are all within the smoke zone. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality issued an air quality advisory for these areas early Monday. Conditions are expected to last until Wednesday night. Residents in affected areas are advised to stay inside if possible and keep doors and windows closed. They recommend avoiding strenuous activity and using high-efficiency particulate air filters indoors. Smoke can mean irritating the eyes and lungs and worsen some medical conditions. Some people are more vulnerable, like infants, young adults, people with heart and lung disease, pregnant people, and older adults. Folks can find cleaner air spaces in their area by going online to 211.org and searching wildfire-related clean air shelters, or by calling 211.
The Biden administration has announced student loan debt relief for some Americans, including more than 16,000 Washingtonians. It affects people who have been paying their debt for 20 years or more. KBOO's Grant Button has more on the story.
Student debt relief is coming for more than 16,000 Washington State residents. Despite the U.S. Supreme Court's decision not to allow a greater pool of people to have their student loans erased, the Biden administration announced it would forgive higher education debt for about 800,000 Americans. Qualified recipients are borrowers on income-driven repayment plans who have made payments for 20 years or longer. At the Washington Student Achievement Council, Michael Miotti says these are largely people who won't be able to pay off their debt or would be significantly strapped in doing so.
This is an opportunity for them to get their affairs in order and move ahead and be successful, hopefully get on a path to success, and or releasing them from an obligation they're struggling to pay, and instead they'll have that income available to spend locally in Washington.
About $777 million in student debt held by Washingtonians is eligible to be erased under the announcement. The Biden administration says it will be completed by August 14th. The announcement stems from a long-standing policy to erase debt for former students who have been paying their loans off for at least two decades. But inaccurate accounting has stymied that relief. According to a National Consumer Law Center report from 2021, only 32 of 4 million eligible borrowers had their debt erased under this policy. Miotti adds the Trump administration slowed the process.
Loan forgiveness has long been a part of the landscape and, in fact, was a valued and generally supported construct around the student loan world.
While relief will be coming to some Washingtonians, a total of about 800,000 people across the state currently have student loan debt. Those folks did not have to make their loan payments during the pandemic. However, loan repayment will start in October. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
Notorious Proud Boy Tusitala Toisi, known as Tiny, was sentenced to an 8-year prison sentence for violence at Portland rallies. In March, a Multnomah County judge found Toisi guilty of 5 counts of assault, 2 counts of unlawful use of a weapon, 2 riot counts, and 2 counts of criminal mischief. Those charges stem from a far-right political rally held in the parking lot of a former Kmart. Toisi was an MC and organizer of the event. It resulted in clashes with far-right protesters and anti-fascist protesters. In particular, Toisi directed far-right protesters to physically attack the driver of a pickup truck because believed they were anti-fascist protesters. It's not the first time that Toisi has faced similar charges. That dates back to 2017. Then he punched a counter-protester in the face, unprovoked, and pleaded guilty to a harassment charge. He was also charged with assault in 2018, but fled to American Samoa.
Ash and debris from last week's fire at an abandoned Kmart in the Portland Park Rose neighborhood has much less asbestos in it than previously thought. During the fire, charred pieces of the abandoned building and heavy dust were found around the neighborhood. Portland Parks and Rec tested debris at Lewitt Park on Thursday and found it contained asbestos. One out of their 9 tests came back with a high level. But newer EPA analysis of the air and the debris on the ground shows little to no asbestos. Residents were previously advised not to touch the debris in their neighborhood because breathing in asbestos can cause cancer. As of Sunday, though, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality gave residents the go-ahead to start cleaning. They advised folks to first wet the chunks that they find, then double bag them in garbage bags, ideally while wearing gloves and a mask. The burned Kmart building has been closed since 2018, and the property owner Prologis says they found asbestos and removed it in September of last year. A demolition permit has been approved for the building, but the developer wanted to wait until their building permit had been approved. Prologis plans to build a diesel freight warehouse there, which residents have been fighting against. Park Rose and Argay Terrace neighbors already face some of the worst air quality in the Portland area.
Two calves have been born to an endangered population of orcas in the Salish Sea, but the whale still remain under threat. Conservation groups blame a lack of food due to four dams in the eastern Washington area that hamper salmon migration. KBOO's Grant Button has more on that story.
There's good news for orcas off Washington's coast. Two new calves have been spotted among the endangered population. However, the births also punctuate the whale's dire situation. Earlier this month, the Center for Whale Research confirmed the birth of two new calves in the L pod of the southern resident killer whales. They're the first additions to the L pod in 2 years. John Rosapepe is the Pacific Northwest representative for the Endangered Species Coalition. He says the whales are still under threat, lacking food primarily because of four salmon-blocking dams in eastern Washington.
So removing the dams and restoring the salmon on the lower Snake River is essential in recovering the southern resident killer whale populations.
Rosapepe says nearly a dozen southern resident orcas are malnourished, including one pregnant whale. The addition of two calves increases the number that frequent the Salish Sea from 73 to 75. The future of the four lower Snake River dams has been contentious for decades. Proponents of the dams say they provide important services, including barging, irrigation, and hydropower. But Rosapepe says recent developments could push forth efforts to remove them.
Governor Inslee and Senator Murray had a study done where they brought together all the different studies, and it shows that we can replace these services.
Final removal of the dams would require authorization from the federal government. But in this year's legislative session, Washington state lawmakers provided funds for planning the transition away from the services the dams provide. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
Vice President Harris calls out Florida's new Black History standards. Former President Trump leads in new polling, and some lawmakers want more information about unidentified flying objects. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Middle school students will be taught that enslaved people benefited from slavery. They insult us in an attempt to gaslight us, and we will not stand for it.
On Friday, Vice President Kamala Harris spoke out against controversial history standards approved by the Florida Board of Education. Part of the new curriculum calls for teaching how slaves develop skills which could be applied for their personal benefit. Harris called for teaching America's full history. On Face the Nation, former New Jersey governor and 2024 Republican presidential hopeful Chris Christie took aim at Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' defense of how the state wants to teach Black history. Christie said his opponent in the primary is ducking responsibility.
"I didn't do it and I'm not involved in it" are not the words of leadership. Look, Governor DeSantis started this fire with the bill that he signed.
New polling confirms that former President Donald Trump holds a significant lead over DeSantis, Christie, and the rest of the GOP field in Iowa and South Carolina. A Fox Business poll released Sunday found Trump is favored by 46% of Republican primary voters in Iowa, three times as many as DeSantis. In North Carolina, Trump has a similar edge over Nikki Haley, the former governor of neighboring South Carolina. Democratic California Representative Nancy Pelosi had harsh words for the man who replaced her as Speaker of the House. On CNN's State of the Union, Pelosi said there is actually no legal way Kevin McCarthy could expunge Trump's two impeachments from the record. She called McCarthy's promises to Trump about that pathetic.
"This is not responsible. This is not about the flag still being there. This is about being afraid."
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says Congress may not have time to cap insulin costs because the National Defense Authorization Act is crowding the calendar. Schumer says with their August recess coming, drug pricing, legislation, and other Democratic priorities may have to wait behind the defense bill.
"The NDAA is full of provisions both sides can celebrate."
Thousands of Israelis marched in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and other places in ongoing protests against the prime minister's plan to weaken judicial checks on executive power. Many charge it could weaken democracy and could push Israel to be more conservative and religious. Finally, some in Washington want the government to release more information on unidentified flying objects. Republican Florida Senator Marco Rubio says he worries these objects might operate in restricted airspace.
So observing unidentified objects over U.S. airspace, particularly over sensitive areas of the country, is not new.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the Cable Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. Today it's an in-depth interview with Oregon State Representative Mark Gamba, giving his unfiltered take on the recent legislative session. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be a bit cloudy with an overnight low of 57. Tomorrow's weather will be a clear and sunny day with a high of 80 degrees. Today in history, in 1974, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that President Nixon didn't have the authority to withhold subpoenaed information, White House tapes, and they didn't order him to turn them over to the White House special prosecutor. The quote of the day is from President Gerald Ford, who said, quote, "The political lesson of Watergate is this: never again must America allow an arrogant, elite guard of political adolescence to pass the regular party organization and dictate the terms of the national election," end quote.
The film Who She Is won Best Animated Film at the Oregon Documentary Film Festival. It spotlights missing and murdered Indigenous people. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
A Wind River-made documentary highlighting missing and murdered Indigenous people won big recently in a film festival. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports.
Who She Is recently won Best Animated Film at the Oregon Documentary Film Festival. The documentary brings faces and voices to four Indigenous women caught in the MMIP epidemic: Sheila, Leela, Jocelyn, and Abby. It aims to humanize the people behind the statistics. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, Native American women are murdered at a rate 10 times higher than the national average. Co-producer Jordan Dresser, who is Northern Arapaho, said the film's team intentionally chose to make an animated documentary to help bring each woman alive.
It's important to know the people who are victims of it and what's happening to them, like the actual people who get murdered, you know, and actual people who survive it. I think it's very important that we always allow them to have a space to tell their stories in good ways.
The film was co-produced by Dresser and Sophie Barksdale, with animation by Ojibwe artist Jonathan Thunder and Casper-based artist Tony Elmore. I'm Hannah Haberman.
Communities across Alaska's North Slope are mourning the loss of Craig George, who recently died in a rafting accident. At the age of 70, George was more than just a scientist to the Inupiaq of Utqiagvik, called Barrow, when he arrived in 1977. He would become one of the world's experts on bowhead whales, and as KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, so respected, he was made an honorary whaling captain.
Keep on whaling.
Among the many tributes to Craig George on Facebook, you'll find different recordings of him singing this song, which he wrote to celebrate whaling. For Craig George, bowhead whales were more than about research.
It's hard to measure the complete impact that Craig had on our lives.
Richard Glenn, an Inupiaq whaler and longtime friend, says he admired George's holistic approach to science, that he learned about seals, birds, everything connected to the world of the whale, including people.
I think the world has yet to realize, after a career of 50 years almost, what we feel.
George was part of a group of scientists who challenged the status quo and went on to prove that native whalers had a better understanding of how to accurately track the whale population than Western science.
When the world might have been focused against them, these gentlemen spent their careers corroborating traditional knowledge about the movement of animals, about the population.
George would often say he received more from the Inupiaq than he could ever possibly give back.
And yet we know he's given back so much, taken our traditional knowledge and science to the world stage and defended it.
Richard Glenn says Craig George left a body of knowledge that will help North Slope whalers now and into the future do just what his song says. Keep on whaling. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
No remains were found at a former Indian boarding school in Genoa, Nebraska. After a two-week archaeological dig, the Associated Press reports, the team led by the state's archaeologist will now examine data and consider next steps. They also plan to hold a virtual meeting this week with tribal representatives from across the country. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As America's epidemic of gun violence escalates, mental health experts say people with psychiatric diagnoses are too often blamed for the now daily occurrence of mass shootings. They say the real danger of gun-related suicide and mental health is ignored. Captain Carly reports.
Mental health experts say people with psychiatric diagnoses are being unfairly scapegoated for America's gun violence epidemic. Studies find there's more news coverage of shootings in which there's been an allegation of mental illness, which can perpetuate the falsehood that people with mental health challenges are more prone to violence. Dr. Jack Rosell with Resolve Crisis Services at the University of Pittsburgh says it's an easy stigma to perpetuate.
The data is pretty clear that in the United States, about half of us live with a psychiatric illness, right? So it's actually quite common to live with a psychiatric illness. It's not those people. It's us together.
Rosell says research shows about one quarter of public mass shootings are tied to mental illness, but there are often a number of risk factors which lead someone to commit violence. Every country has residents with mental illness, he says, but only America experiences the equivalent of one mass shooting per day. Experts say blaming mental illness for gun violence also distracts from the larger risk of guns and suicide, which accounts for nearly 90% of firearm-related deaths in Maine. Rosell says it's people's access to guns which often leads to tragedy.
And while we certainly have tremendous needs to improve mental health services, pouring more money into mental health isn't necessarily going to reduce the violence that's out in our communities to any significant degree.
Rosell says he regularly encounters patients who are fearful to disclose their mental health challenges should they too be labeled as potentially violent and even involuntarily hospitalized. He says the media should rely on experts, not pundits or politicians, when covering mass shootings so the public can better understand risk factors for violence and how to prevent it. For Maine News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
A once nearly extinct Northwest flower is making its way off the endangered species list. That's thanks to conservation efforts. It's a bright yellow flower found in Oregon and Washington's prairies called the golden paintbrush. It was first put on the endangered species list in 1997. Back then, you could only find the flower in about 10 different spots in the Northwest. They were totally gone from Oregon. Golden paintbrush was threatened by habitat loss, fire suppression, and agricultural and urban development. Before colonization, indigenous people used wildfire to manage Northwest prairies, where the golden paintbrush thrive. After colonization, prairies were largely crowded out. About 10% of golden paintbrush remain in Washington and about 1% grow in Oregon. That's compared to their former mass. Restoring prairies and golden paintbrush are good for other species as well. The Taylor's checkerspot butterfly is one of those. It lays its eggs on golden paintbrush and the larvae survive on the plant. This good news comes at the 50-year anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. By the way, a few other species in the Northwest have been delisted as well, like the Oregon minnow's Foskett speckled dace, the borax lake chub, Bradshaw's desert parsley, and the aquatic plant water howellia.
Around 1,400 Chinese scientists that work in the U.S. are taking positions at home. The Chinese government has created attractive programs for scientists employed abroad, but xenophobia and hostile American policies play a role too. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello everyone. Xie Xiaoliang is one of Harvard's premier scientists, a biophysical chemist known for his work on DNA. He's leaving Harvard to take an academic position in his home country, China, one of about 1,400 top Chinese scientists who in recent years have given up their U.S. positions and returned to China. The reason is not so much China's Thousand Talents program, which seeks to entice scientists to return home with promises of lucrative academic and research positions. It's the lingering effects of the Trump and Biden Justice Department's so-called China Initiative. That program sought, with outstanding failure, to weed out Chinese scientists, including Chinese Americans, who were supposedly committing economic espionage. The University of Michigan's president was among many major university leaders who wrote to the U.S. Attorney General to complain about the unfairness of the China Initiative, pointing out its racial profiling, lack of evidence of wrongdoing, and pressure on the university to, quote, investigate researchers who are singled out only because of their personal or professional connections with China. The China Initiative has ended, but the careers of a number of prominent scientists of Chinese descent in the U.S. were ruined or set back. Fear stalks Chinese visitors and citizens alike. A 2022 survey of 1,300 scientists of Chinese descent at American universities found, quote, a strong sense of uneasiness and fear. 35% of respondents feel unwelcome in the U.S., and 72% do not feel safe as an academic researcher. 42% are fearful of conducting research. 65% worried about collaborations with China. And a remarkable 86% perceive that it is harder to recruit top international students now compared to 5 years ago, end quote. That's particularly unfortunate for several reasons. First, Chinese scientists and engineers form a significant proportion of all new PhDs from U.S. universities, 17% in 2020. The great majority had intended to remain in the U.S. prior to the China Initiative. Second, China has become a science superpower if one judges from the scientific papers its scientists publish. Its scientists now outpublish U.S. scientists in scientific and technological journals. Moreover, scientific papers co-authored by U.S. and Chinese scientists outnumber any other collaborative papers by a wide margin. So much of our intellectual technological power is from immigrants, says Stephen Zhu, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist at Stanford and a former U.S. Secretary of Energy. We're shooting ourselves not in the foot, but in something close to the head. Roughly 300,000 Chinese graduate students and researchers are in the U.S. right now. Outside the halls of Congress, where alarm bells constantly go off about the China threat, scientists, research laboratory directors, and university officials recognize what a resource these visitors are. Their research, the patents they create, the collaborative work they do, and, yes, the fees they pay are major contributions to American science and the institutions that give them a home. As the Michigan letter states, Chinese scientists are crucial to, quote, the future of the U.S. STEM workforce. STEM standing for science, technology, engineering, and math. Moreover, quote, many of our most challenging global problems, including climate change and sustainability, and current and future pandemics, require international engagement. Without an open and inclusive environment that attracts the best talent in all areas, the U.S. cannot retain its world-leading position in science and technology, end quote. There is, to be sure, reason for caution on national security grounds. Concern about research findings here being conveyed to the Chinese military is real. U.S. universities are well aware of the problem, however, and have developed guidelines for collaborative research with security implications. But overwhelmingly, the view at universities and research facilities is that our society and economy would pay a high price if Chinese scientists were suddenly barred from entry. That means U.S. visa processes should be streamlined, backlogs cleared, and talented individuals given expanded opportunities to obtain green cards, says one writer long involved in promoting U.S.-China ties. Congress isn't listening, however. Right-wing members, with some support from liberals, believe any contact with Chinese scientists is a national security danger. Let's remember that no one appreciates academic freedom more than visitors from China and other countries under authoritarian rule. When that freedom is violated by harassment and suspicion, word gets back to China very quickly, and the rewards for returning to China in money and prestige become tantalizing. Academic freedom is under assault in the U.S. for other reasons these days. It's in our self-interest to protect it from those who really don't have the national interest at heart. I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 24th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and ideas at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff and Grant Button. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is the effervescent Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Ron Bronson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. Stay tuned now for the Coast Range New Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill, and we have a very exciting episode today. So we've done several shows this year on Oregon's 2023 legislative session, and that just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. So as the dust settles, I wanted to look back on the session, revisit some of the bills we dug into on previous episodes, and explore how folks can keep pressure on their legislators between the sessions. And I couldn't think of a better person to guide us through the good, the bad, and the ugly of this legislative session than one of Oregon's most tireless climate champions, State Representative Mark Gamba. I've known Mark since I worked as the field director for his 2020 congressional campaign, so I knew I could trust him to give a no BS account of his perspective on the session. I didn't, however, realize just how honest and unfiltered he was prepared to be. So he had a lot to say about how business gets done in Salem, and I think his perspective is one that you don't often hear from